This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. And now it's time for What I'm Reading. That's a segment where we talk about things that we're reading. And this week, we have Leslie. Leslie, tell us.
Yeah, so, you know, I read this book when it first came out, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately. And the book that I've been thinking about lately is A Colony in a Nation by Chris Hayes, right? So I know he's not an academic. And I actually started reading this book, assuming I would hate it, but I actually didn't. I actually enjoyed it a lot, right? So what Hayes does in this book is, so he basically says that there are two criminal justice regimes that operate simultaneously in this country, right? One that's ruled by law and the other that's ruled by order, right? And he kind of credits Nixon and his administration for basically laying the groundwork for the creation of this dual system. And not that this dual system didn't exist before, but having this dual system work and be seen as like justified in an ostensibly post civil rights struggle America, right? Which is what makes it so kind of brilliant, right? So some parts of America are ruled by law, and those parts enjoy these rights, you know, all the rights that are commensurate with law, right? And he calls this segment of the country the nation, right? And here we have a policing regime that we expect to see in a democracy, right? But then in other parts of the country, order prevails over law, right? And he terms this segment of the population the colony, right? So here, policing basically organizes a significant portion of the people's lives, and is not really practiced in a way that considers the rights of the individuals, right? Including the right to life. So here we have what resembles kind of like a totalitarian police state, but it's embedded within a democracy, right? Which is what makes this so interesting. So how are the two defined? So there are these borders between what's the colony and what's the nation. And those, he says, are primarily defined by race. Although increasingly, like basically his argument is that since the Great Recession, class has been used as a dividing line, right? And working class white communities are increasingly being associated with the colony. And this in and of itself should give those currently defined as part of the nation pause, because, you know, it seems that there exists a real threat that the tools that are used to control the colony could actually be used increasingly to control spaces that are currently designated as part of the nation. And thinking back to the whole law and order dichotomy, I think what interests me is who gets to decide what order looks like and what motivates that design. I think Hayes is saying that it's all based on fear, specifically white fear. And this fear, which seems mostly irrational, imposes huge costs on people in the colony to keep the nation prosperous and allow its inhabitants to sleep at night, right? I think that's basic. I think those are the cores of his argument. And I'm still like chewing over it all. So what do you all think?
Can I just get a clarification? So it's like the idea is that different spheres of society, there's a law. So let's say there's a privileged class where the police follow the law and sort of they have all of the trappings of what we would think of as a rule-bound society. And then there is a separate America in which it's mostly about keeping people in line, and those laws are more ignored.
Yeah, and it's mostly keeping people in line, it seems to me, through his argument, so that people who are part of the quote-unquote nation, like, can feel secure. Right. Even if they may not have anything to do with anything having to do in these spaces where these policed people live. so.
I mean, that sounds just like, you know, we were talking earlier about terrorism and just people's insane fear of the Muslim community and you know, how the state's coming down on them in some ways just to pander to people's panic about the, you know, about the possibility that they themselves might be hurt by terrorism.
Well, I mean, I think this law versus order is a very useful dichotomy. You know, you see it in things like, you know, the kind of Nixonian aspects. The Nixonian aspect of politics isn't about the rule of law. It's much more about the forces of order versus the forces of perceived chaos. And you see this encapsulated in things like, you know, Trump somewhat infamously saying an audience of cops, you know, that, you know, when you arrest somebody, feel free to rough them up a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
That's like a microcosm of the attitude of that, you know, it's contrary to law, but in some ways it's in favor of order, in that it's saying that the agents of the state should be allowed to, you know, use somewhat arbitrary violence that's contrary to law in order to maintain the needs of order. I haven't read the Hayes book, although I generally like him and think he's a smart and intellectually honest guy. There was a piece, not in the current ASR, but the previous ASR by Seim, S-E-I-M, called The Ambulance, which was all about paramedics driving ambulances. And essentially the article was, what do you do with homeless people? And, you know, you have these homeless people who are, you know, in some place where they're causing problems, but they're not really committing a crime, at least not a crime that's worth incarcerating, and they're not really experiencing a medical emergency, at least not one that's worth hospitalizing, but they're just being a pain in the ass, and they're disrupting public life and, you know, in making it impossible for whatever business is there to operate, for whatever other people are trying to be in that public space to occupy that public space, and basically just disrupting order. And but the cops see their core mission as maintaining law and prosecuting crimes or catching crimes and, you know, and things that the DA would actually prosecute, that sort of thing. And paramedics see their core mission as treating medical emergencies. And so they're both kind of tasked with maintaining order, but they also see it as peripheral to their main mission. And so in practice, what you end up seeing is cops, paramedics, and then the triage nurses at emergency rooms arguing over who's going to have to deal with this person who's a threat to order, but isn't really a threat to law.
Yeah, Leslie, I was going to ask, so does Hayes talk about, I mean, so you mentioned that he sort of talks about the, I guess, expansion of the colony,
yeah,
or that's the concern. Does he talk about who were the agents of colonization, right? So who were the actors here, right? Like, and who's supposed to be worried? It sounds like he's saying, white middle-class people, you should be worried about this even though you're not affected now because colonization is coming for you. But then I guess the question is, who is it? Aren't the very people he's talking to arguably the agents who are doing the colonizing?
So I think that's partly right, right? So that's one of the things that I wasn't totally clear about. So like I said, one of the questions that came up for me is whose order, right? And who gets to decide, right, on what that order should look like, right? So, you know, growing up in New York, right, you know, that was Giuliani, right? Giuliani decided what order was going to look like, right? And, you know, and I think in large part, it depends on where you live in America. You know, one of the things that I think would be particularly interesting, you know, for people who study, like for urban sociologists, people who study gentrification, right, if they could use this typology of law versus order to observe how it plays out in neighborhoods that are undergoing gentrification, right? So I think you could like witness in real time the fluidity of this boundary between colony and nation, right? As well as who's marked as belonging to one versus the other within that same space, right?
You know what I'm wondering? If the process of designating people as a threat to order kind of takes the shape that the whole Colin Kaepernick taking a knee does, where it starts, you take an incident, and in order to whip up the population for your own political benefit, you sort of rebrand something that's innocuous or a minor threat into something that seems like an existential threat to a particular group in order to win over their support. I'm thinking about how, like, you know, the Colin Kaepernick taking a knee was a pretty uncontroversial, you know, there was a pretty uncontroversial reason for doing it. But to whip up, you know, the base, Trump had to turn this into a they hate America. They're protesting the troops.
Oh, wait a minute. You're presuming that that was uncontroversial. I'm not saying I dispute it or anything like that. I'm just saying, right, how would people in general take it? And his underlying issue was essentially that cops should be less aggressive in the use of force because it leads to these kind of false positive police shootings. And that is a controversial point, right? And it's precisely the issue we're talking about. His point was essentially that law should trump order, and we should have less interest in order and more interest in law. And that's an extremely controversial point.
For who?
Well, for all the people who favor order over law, right? I mean, if you look at surveys, cops became more popular after 2015. And the most straightforward interpretation of that is that it was a backlash to Ferguson, that sort of business.
Corey, you got to have something to say on this. You're at the intersection of conservatism and the black community. I don't want you to scoop yourself. But
no, actually, oddly enough, I was thinking not so much about my research, but about my life. So I recently moved to Washington, D.C., and I'm in certainly a gentrifying neighborhood. And I'm just thinking about this idea of, like, order. And, like, one of the things that's really interesting, even though I'm part of the problem, obviously, is watching my fellow gentrifiers talk about sort of almost the imposition of order onto this neighborhood, right? As if there isn't one that exists. And what always strikes me about this is that it feels very insidery, outsidery, because I'm like, well, to the people who live here, the rules of the soccer field are pretty clear, right? Like, mm-hmm. The only people who seem frustrated are, like, the new white dudes who, like, want to put up a list. You know, it's like, well, the old timers seem to know how this goes. There is an order, but it's like there's this sort of imposition of an external order that's being, you know, hotly debated. And so I guess in some ways it's interesting to think about this, like, right, like, I guess this is Leslie's question of whose idea of order. So that's where my head was at, actually, just like using your deep sociological insights to process my own bloody gentrification head.
Can I go back to something Corey said like 5-10 minutes ago, where he was saying, like, where does this drive for order come from? And, you know, is it, you know, in that Hayes is making the point that it could then be applied to middle-class white people. But that wasn't what I heard Leslie saying in the intro. Again, I haven't read Hayes's book, but I heard you saying that it could be applied to lower-class whites, which is a big difference, right? And also, I mean, I think that's ironic in that if you look at who's the core constituency for order over law, as encapsulated in things like the Trump election, right, his constituency is downscale whites. And you know what, if this was 300 years ago, when we were talking about the Haitian Revolution or something, they would have called, you know, les petits blancs. This is the constituency that favors that, but Hayes seems to be making the argument, and it seems plausible on the face of it, that this sort of thing could be applied to that constituency as well, right? That especially with things like the opiate epidemic.
Totally. And I think, you know, we were talking, you know, offline about police shootings, right? Fatal police shootings in 2017. And the majority of those shootings were of whites. And while there wasn't a class analysis, at least not one that I saw, I would hazard to guess that just about all of those whites were not middle class and above.
My understanding is a lot of the whites who are shot by cops are not, you know, I thought he was reaching for a gun, like the typical shooting of a black guy. The typical shooting of a white person by a police officer is a mentally ill person who's committing suicide by cop. And so many of those people actually would be middle class. Mm. At least in their family of origin, right? I mean, it may be that they've been homeless for the last few years, but they come from a middle-class family.
Mm. Well, so here's a debate about what constitutes middle class.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to save that for... That's a whole other...
Yeah, we'll solve that in the next episode.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.